Welcome to Caribbean Mystics Podcast,
where we marry mysticism, superstition, and lore. I'm your host, Paulina.
And I'm your host, Gabrielle. And we are your resident Caribbean mystics.
Join us today as we explore the depths of real supernatural stories.
Told by real people located right in our very own backyard.
Natalie is an imaginative child with an uncanny connection to an old tree situated in the middle of her backyard on the island of St. Thomas. Curiosity quickly turns into panic as the paranormal activity around Natalie's home ramps up, leaving her family in search of answers.
My name is Natalie, and I am a sixth-generation Virgin Islander. My family is based on the island of St. Thomas. This story is taking place in Mandal Bay area, where my mother, my father, myself, and my older brother lived in a small house where we had the kind of a middle floor. There was an apartment underneath us, and then above us, but quite to the left, still connected to our house, was the third little part of the complex. So three different families lived in this home, and we had a big gate leading into the house. Below the house had a beautiful yard with about six very tall coconut trees in it, but specifically in the back of our part of the house, we had a backyard that led into a bunch of bush, but we had a big, beautiful tree. I don't even remember what kind of tree it was, but my brother and I used to call it the mother willow tree. And it was like him and I were never drawn to play in the main yard. If him and I ever played, it was in the back with mother willow. And at this time, I was 6 years old. My brother was about 9 years old. And the energy I felt with mother willow tree, it often to me felt like she was in pain. The amount of times I would dig through the cabinets in the bathroom to find band-aids and some gauze and wrap and stuff to wrap her roots with, because I thought she was in need of medical attention all the time. I always felt like I needed to console this tree and that I needed to bandage her and care for her every day. So I spent a lot of my time with the mother willow tree. Now, my family, my parents, we've always known about entities and ghosts and spirits and stuff, and we always believed in them because we are a Caribbean family, so we believe in those types of things because our ancestors did as well. So it was already embedded in my soul to know, but I was pretty young to understand. So my connection with Mother Willow Tree was, to me, very positive all the time. But there were a couple of nights in the home that were a little uncomfortable, whereas my mother out loud would say things like, "Not tonight, spirit. Leave us alone today, ghost. Like, we don't want you in our dinner space right now." And she would be actively speaking out loud to a ghost or a spirit or something that she might have felt around us. Now, me in my young age in the house was very different than outside. I would be caught literally against the wall with my forehead against the wall, speaking whispers and gibberish to a shadow that wasn't cast by anything. And it was told by my parents every time they'd catch me in the room, the shadow would disappear. And I would like break from my gibberish trance against the wall. And this would occur all the time. Now, my brother and I stayed in a room where he had the bunk top and I had the bunk bottom, and I would always find my way to get out of the bed and find my parents' room. And one night in particular, I woke in the middle of the night. My brother was on the top bunk, I'm in the bottom, and laying in my bed, it felt like everything was darker than it had been before. I'm afraid of the dark, so I always had a light where I could see. But at this point, it was like all the lights were gone and I was by myself, and it's as though the darkness was coming closer to me. And it was me laying in my bed, this darkness just swooping in on me like a smoke, but I didn't let it get that close. To me, I felt like I was about to be trapped by this darkness. And as a child, you know, you want your mommy and your daddy. So from the feeling I felt of this energy, I felt it was only coming towards me, which is why I didn't even care to wake up my brother. I left him right there to hold on to the darkness for me. And I found my way out and I started making my way through the hallway. But it was as though it was following me, because in the hallway, getting to my parents' room, it just became darker and deeper and longer. And it was like I had never been in this hallway before. How is this hallway so long right now? I should already be there. And that's when I'm starting to get scared and hyperventilate and cry. And I was more scared in the hallway than in my room. I felt like I wasn't going to make it to the bedroom. And I finally reached my parents' room. And I open the door and they're like looking at me like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I don't know, something's scaring me, something's like coming after me is what I felt. And I get into the bed with my parents because that's the safest place, you know? And while we're sleeping in the bed, they had a small one, those old big, not no flat screen, those big ones, the big thick ones, but it was up against the wall up high. And while we're laying in the bed, my parents start falling asleep again. And the TV on the top of the wall, the whole screen turns to that gray and black chatter and just as loud as the TV could go. My parents are awake. My mother's, we're sleeping, ghosts, we're sleeping. Get away from us, we're sleeping. And I'm just like, Mommy, like, you can't keep talking to the ghost like that. Like, the ghost is here. Like, it wants to talk to us clearly. It's mad you don't want to listen. And I'm arguing with my mother about the way she's speaking to this ghost. Night goes on, daylight comes, and it's a brand new day. My mother knows I'm afraid, and she decides she's going to do something for this ghost. She thought putting brooms upside down outside the front door, pouring salt in different places in the house. But my first thing was like, why she got a broom upside down? Like, what's she doing? You know? So that was my first questions to her about what she was doing. And she decided she was protecting the house from the ghost. Let the ghost know that we don't want him in the house no more. So I always spent my time with Mother Willow, and there was a point where I remember the Mother Willow tree, I wasn't in connection with her anymore. I didn't feel that she was in pain anymore. I didn't feel the need to bandage her up or take care of her or spend my afternoon with her or something anymore. And even my brother, he was expecting me to go outside and do all these things with our Mother Willow tree, and I just wasn't feeling it. Night come, we're all sitting down in the living room, we're watching the TV, we are on this big gray couch, we have a table in the living room, and the way it looked, it was a big glass oval table, it was black and gold, and it had a big black panther in the center, and it was like kind of looking at us, and around it was the gold. But we're sitting down in the living room, and we're all watching the TV. And we had a cat named Smokey. It was a great cat. And Smokey is meowing and meowing and fussing outside, like jumping on the side of the screen to the window, scratching, trying to do whatever Smokey was doing, going crazy. And we opened the door and we let Smokey in the house. And when my mother sat back down from leaving the cat in the house, the TV in the living room now went the whole screen, that same black and gray, and the chattering as loud as the TV can go, when the TV really wasn't that loud in the first place, but it was just loud and unstoppable. No matter how much you tried to turn the TV off, this thing kept going, and the TV stayed on the whole time. And my mother's yelling and yelling, like, Like, get out of here, ghost. Like, talking to the spirit. Like, get out of here. We're trying to watch our TV show. Like, she's some big boss lady going fight the spirit, right? And in the moment of the TV shattering and my mother talking to the ghost, the big, beautiful, forever we had this big, beautiful panther table, it cracked completely in half. And the inner portion of the table fell right on my mother's foot. And I'm there like, I tell you, that's why you shouldn't be talking to the spirits like this and la, 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 la. And my mother's cussing, yelling, her foot all mashed up with the whole half the glass table on it. My father's trying to console my mother, help her get whatever she needs for her foot. And it's just like, we're tired of this, you know? This was probably the biggest experience we had had with the spirits or ghosts in our house, and it didn't cause us to move out, but we definitely took note that it's what was going on. We had planned on moving because I was getting older, my brother and I were going to have separate rooms, so we had already planned on leaving. This ghost wasn't really no bother to us really the whole time we lived there, but eventually we did end up moving on. We moved to a place on the north side. My father works at the West Indian Company, and he works with a lot of boat captains and such. And about 2 years after we moved, there is a fellow talking to my father and getting his IDs and such, and says, hey, you've lived here for a long time. Like, what do you know about things like this happening in someone's house? And he starts explaining the chattering of the TVs coming on and off at night and not turning off with the remote, and seeing big shadows in areas that would never have a shadow, and then when approaching them going away, and he's bringing up all these things, and my father's like, where's his house? Like, where do you live? And this fellow lived in the exact same house that my family and I lived in, this same house. So when my father told him that, he kind of went crazy, this fellow from the States, and he went and dug up as much history as he could on the home, who owned it before the owners, and he went as far back as he could, and weeks later came to my father and told him that the reason why there's this entity bothering us in the house is because he found that the area of Mandal was a place where a lot of the Indians, I'm not sure which tribe, had lived, and that the area that they had dug up some things in the back, and they had found that it was a burial ground, and they were actually finding like skeletons, like bones and stuff, like deep in the ground. And he came telling my father all of this stuff, who of course came home and told my mother, and she's like, all that time, you see, all of this time they're mad at us because somebody else built a house on their burial ground, how are we supposed to know? And something my mother had always taught us was that it's considered to be a great disrespect to build on top of the burial ground, as it's a disturbance to them, and it's going to hinder them moving forward and their spirits passing on. She brings up other parts of St. Thomas that she felt this is why this place didn't prosper, because they had their property built on a burial ground, and she ranted and went on and on about it. But we live in a different house now. We don't have any issues. I've never had a spirit talk to us there. And truth is, we never really would have even known or looked it up ourselves, just because it's so common to us to have spirits move throughout our family's history. We never dug as deep as the strangers from the States had, because they were actually afraid. So they're the ones who found out what was going on and told us. But all that time, I'm speaking to Indians and walls, and Mother Willow Tree was rooted in a burial ground where she was feeling all of the pain of all of these people in the ground. And so all this time I'm feeling the energy of this tree and wanting to care for it. That's kind of what stuck with me most, is like, I felt for so long that this tree needed my help and needed me to nurture it. And just to find that it was placed right in this sacred space was very intriguing to me. And I feel now, as I'm older, I've lost connection with energy as the way I had when I was a child. because we bury it, we push it away, and we don't learn as much, you know, because it's not talked about. So I'm really glad I could share this story and what I think I've learned from being in this experience like that.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Caribbean Mystics Podcast. I am your co-host, Gabrielle.
Yes, and this is Paulina. It's so good for you guys to be back this season. We have collected a bunch of stories for you to enjoy and hope that they fulfill all of your patient and awaiting desires.
Oh yeah,
if that makes sense.
We haven't been here since like December, and so it feels really nice to be here in March to be able to receive everybody. And I know that there was a little bit of a wait time between seasons, but I think our audience can garner that there is a lot of behind the scenes work that has to go into this level and quality of sound production.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's just like a show, you know what I mean? Like a TV show. You wait for the next season, you're like, I can't wait for that long, but at least we don't make you wait a year, you know?
Right. And technically, we would come out a little faster if we got stories faster. So there's also that. So if you or somebody you know have a story that is true and has taken place in the Caribbean region, please reach out to us. We would love to have your story featured on our show.
Yes, I want more stories from like different islands, like Down Island, Puerto Rico too. We need some PR stories.
Oh yeah, I completely agree, because we are the Caribbean Mystics, and right now it's boiling down to being the VI Mystics.
Well, I hope you guys all had a wonderful break while we were gone, at least, you know, a happy new year and holidays, and winter is ending, even though, you know, that's kind of non-existent in the Caribbean, but we feel it a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, you can always tell if you're from there if it's winter time, because just that few degrees makes a difference.
And the locals don't go beach
because the water is way too cool.
Oh yeah, and it's definitely been cool. So yeah, it's definitely been like winter time here in the Caribbean. Without the snow, of course. So, yeah. Guys, today's episode is RAM, with historical context, cultural backdrop. And so we're going to jump into this, like, rather abruptly, because we have so much content that we really want to cover. And considering that this is our first episode back, we want to, you know, do a bang-up job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love this story. That Natalie has contributed to the show. There's so many aspects, like you said, about it that we're going to cover. So let's dive right into the first one. I think you wanted to go into the location or like background.
Yeah. So Natalie talks about living in this home that's located in the Mandal area of St. Thomas. And people who are familiar with Mandal, there's a bay attached called Mandal Bay. And it's very well known that these were once the sites of where indigenous people created settlements. And based off of the research that I've done, I haven't seen anything that's gone in and done anything specifically in that Mandal area. But just to give you guys some more context, there was really three types of indigenous people that lived in the Virgin Islands prior to European exploration. And that was the Siboney indigenous people, the Arawak indigenous people, and the Carib indigenous people. You can find traces of like the Siboney and the Arawak indigenous people on St. Thomas. You can find the Siboney and Arawak on St. John. On St. Croix, you can find the Arawak and the Carib, but I don't think the Carib was as present in St. Thomas and St. John as it was in St. Croix. And so this area of Mandal Bay, if you've ever been there, it's a very secluded area, and the energy of it feels very different. Historically speaking, there was a plantation that was located in that area, and it was a plantation in which enslaved people were forced to do manual labor. And for those of you who are familiar with the area, the Yvonne Millen-Arbowski Elementary School is located on the site of the former Mandal plantation factory. So the name Mandal is derived from the Danish surname of the people that own the plantation. There has been a lot of conversation around the development of Mandal Bay, and I'll get into that at the end of the episode. But luckily, nothing of the sort has happened yet. When Natalie made the claim that she had heard that there was a burial ground in the area, I definitely believe it. And I think that people who have visited the area or live in the area could believe it as well, because there is almost like this very dense energy, especially on Mandal Bay. Like, I have gone to the bay before, and there is a very, it's heavy, you know? And also, if you think about it, if you had these indigenous peoples that had these settlements, part of what began society is when people started burial grounds. And so it makes perfect sense that if you have these indigenous peoples that set up these communities, that they would have a burial ground close by. And oftentimes it served the indigenous people to create settlements closer to waterways, because it opened the door for fishing and for harvesting any kind of animals like conch and clams and stuff, that and whelks that could be on the rocks. Right now, the Mandal Bay area is used extensively by the local population. It's not a very well-traversed beach for people who are visiting the island, but it's used as a fishing area. It's a hurricane shelter for boats during the time of hurricane season. And it's also the home of the largest Elkhorn coral reef on the island of St. Thomas. It also has a very extensive mangrove, which is a very important part of our ecosystems along all beaches, and it also helps to protect the shoreline from any kind of storm erosion.
I love Mandal Bay, actually. You know, my mother lives by there, and I go in down there. I love that it's secluded, and it's one of the few untouched last places on our island that haven't been overly developed or specified for tourism. So you know, my brother-in-law loves to go fish in there in the salt pond, because I know there's a little pond there as well. And it's a rocky beach, but it's still, like, beautiful. And I had no idea there was so much history down there with it as well. So that's really interesting. And it makes sense, you know, because there is, like, an energy down there when you go there. And it feels old. It feels old, too.
Yeah,
I think there's, like, a Bushman camp down there, too, no? Like, he used to do classes for kids to, like, live off the land as well, I think.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there might be, like, a Bushman camp. I know that there was somebody that was, like, living on the beach, like, full-time, you know, and not in a house. Like, they had done, like, a makeshift something, and they were literally, like, living on the beach itself. But I don't know anything past that. What my understanding of Mandal in the times that I've been there, I personally haven't felt safe. Because it's so secluded, there is an uncomfortable feeling when I go down there. You know, it kind of just feels like anything could happen to you, because no one is really around to hear your screams.
Too. Yeah, definitely. Nobody around to hear alone, your screams. If you're alone, yeah, definitely eerie. I'll agree with you on that. And I did see somebody living there once when I went down. I was like,
you know what it gives me? You know what the energy is super similar to, which is why I feel like it, the whole thing just makes perfect sense, is if you've ever gone to Megan's Bay and you've walked in the back by the Arboretum, I think is how you pronounce it. There's this very dense energy where you're just like, something about her, back here. It's pretty and all, but I just feel like this discomfort. You're right. It's the same exact dense energy where you're like, this is beautiful to visit, but I ain't trying to spend no extra time here.
You're absolutely right. It does. And it does feel the same. Now that you say that, because I get the same feeling in there of it feeling very old.
Yes.
And again, ancient, like historical. Like, it's almost like you can feel the presence of
of who used to reside there, you know? Yeah. Like, it does. It feels old back there. And even the trees, though, from what has withstood the hurricanes, mm-hmm. those are some of the biggest trees you'll see, you know? Speaking of trees, I love how Natalie goes into talking about Mother Willow Tree. And you know what's funny is, now that I have a 2-year-old, I watch a lot of cartoons. And I watched Pocahontas a few months back. And her spirit guide was Mother Willow Tree. And so I'm thinking, like, you know, maybe this was the era of when she was watching Pocahontas and she felt inspired to call it that.
Yeah.
But Pocahontas was also an indigenous person. And maybe there was some kind of subconscious connection that Natalie made there with naming this tree. And I really want to go into the subject of trees because I'm a big fan of trees. And I find that they have just so much to offer us as people. But I know you wanted to go into it as well and talk about some of the cultural significance locally on island that we have with certain trees.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to cover that. But I do want you to go first because I feel like okay. what you're about to say is going to really lay the foundation of what I will add onto the information that you're going through.
For sure. So, you know, listening to the story, I just started diving into research of, like, do trees have souls? Do they have like an internal being or something about them? We know that they are living, but do they have more to them? I've always felt intuitively that they have, and that came from me just touching trees as a child and even as an adult. I highly recommend you go out there and hug a tree. And I know this sounds so granola, but when you hug a tree, it almost feels like you are embracing a person. You can feel that energy of this tree. And each tree is very much different. So not only spiritually does it have significance, but also scientifically. You know, studies have shown that nature and trees positively impact blood pressure and cholesterol. It lowers heart rate and reduces the stress hormone cortisol. It's even proven to help fight cancer cells, and going on nature walks, even looking at a picture or videos of nature is almost as good. But there's something about our bodies and being in nature that just click. You know, we're meant to be. And I think anybody can agree that they feel this sense of, like, relaxation when they go outside, take a deep breath of fresh air, and walk amongst some beautiful trees and nature.
I completely agree. Just to, like, piggyback onto what you're saying, I feel like people who are most, like, mentally healthy are people who have a connection to nature, like, who have yes. set aside time to be connected to nature. And it's really interesting because there's this ongoing dialogue on social media of people being like, I thought I was anxious and depressed, but turns out I just needed to leave the United States. But when you mm-hmm. look at the areas in which they're traversing, like, highly wooded areas or beaches, mm-hmm. and it's a more closer connection to nature, and it almost allows for a level of relaxation that you just can't get in the big bad concrete jungle.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the biggest reasons why anxiety and depression and mental health issues have been on the rise, because we have screens, we have computers in the palm of our hands, you know. Generations mm-hmm. nowadays we're addicted to a screen, and more screen time equals less nature time, less time out in the real world. And a dose of that can really do us some good. So there's something about trees that has this power, this ability to just provide the essentials of life for us. And not just spiritually and physically, but, you know, they literally provide oxygen for our planet and for our lungs. And they have the power to remove harmful gases. So I was going on a blog as well because I wanted to know a little bit more of, like, what some people in a spiritual aspect think about trees, you know. And one gentleman had said quite simply that they have this like restorative healing power where they are able to transmute energy in the roots of the land. So say some traumatic event has happened on the land, like what Natalie's talking about. There's a burial ground there, and maybe more happened. There's a lot of death and blood soaks into the soil. You know, I often think of like those plantations when there was a lot of suffering, and hanging trees where they hanged people. These trees can imprint these energies and these traumatic events. But I also believe that they have the power to transmute that energy, like this one gentleman was saying, through the soil, through its roots, and up into the atmosphere again, and pretty much renews that energy and cleans it out. And I feel like that would just make so much sense because they do that physically as well and spiritually. So I just liked going into the details of the tree. And from Natalie's story of her being a young girl, having this intuitive feeling about this tree that she needed to like help it, you know, it was just so sweet, just a sweet vision of her putting bandages on the tree and everything, because maybe she just got this initial feeling that this tree has seen a lot. You know, I always imagine that when I see a big tree, I walk by, imagine like what they have witnessed over the years. They could be hundreds of years old, seen so much, experienced so much. And this tree was calling out to her. And last note, but kind of unrelated to the story, there, it's funny we're talking about trees because there's a specific tree outside of my camper that me and my son walk to, and I don't like this tree, and I don't know why. It just gives me this like the heebie-jeebies. It gives me this vibe, and I'm like, I don't want to go near that tree. So I don't know, there's something about it. Who knows?
No, I believe that. You should definitely listen to that internal knowing. And I'm going to tell you why in my references that I'm about to go into.
Okay.
So in the Caribbean, there is a lot of belief systems around like the natural world, like why certain things happen and what certain things mean, like different omens and stuff. And so you can see a lot of this be translated into our relationship with like trees. And so there are trees like the rosary pea tree, which creates what we would all know if you grew up in the Caribbean as jumbie beads. And the jumbie beads are either said to be protective talismans against negative energies, or it's believed that the jumbie beads actually attract jumbies to you. Not to mention they're poisonous, and so you shouldn't really be handling them at all. But I do know as a child, like, coming into contact with the jumbie beads and being so beguiled because they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And also you would grow up hearing these stories, and depending on who you spoke to, determined, you know, like, what perspective they was coming from. Another tree that has significance in the Caribbean region is the lignum vitae tree. So the lignum vitae tree is considered the Caribbean tree of life, and its significance is that over centuries, the people that was living on the island, both the enslaved people as well as the indigenous people, were able to find ways to use this tree to support like them for medicinal usage. And so it was very good for removing congestion. It was very good for arthritis, any type of pain. It was like a pain reliever. And so it developed this reputation of being like a literal like cure-all type of tree. Not to mention it has some of the hardest wood that you can find in the world. And so it was used for building a lot of structures. And then the last tree I wanted to get into is the silk cotton tree, which is also called a kapok tree. And this tree actually originates from Asia and West Africa. And in West Indian folklore, it's believed that the tree is home to spirits and supernatural beings. The Arawak people specifically believe that during the night, the silk cotton tree could leave its place, walk around, and then return by morning. Tainos would use the wood to craft canoes and in return offer sacrificial gifts to the tree to offer gratitude. West Africans believe that the silk cotton tree is a very sacred tree and provides a connection to the ancestors. In the same breath, though, there is this negative perspective, where there is a belief that the tree is actually a portal to the underworld in which the devil can travel through at any time. And so it's believed that this tree has a lot of spirits that linger around the tree. Not to mention, it was believed that that the spirits of enslaved people who were hung on the tree their spirit ended up staying with the tree and would live in the roots and the branches. And the belief system continued to like create more behind it, in that you couldn't cut down a silk cotton tree, because if you did, you would be unleashing all of the entities that were so called trapped in the tree. But they're a very like spiritually charged tree, and even when you see them, you know, like the silk cotton tree creates these little like pods where literal cotton is actually like grown from the tree, and you could pick the cotton from the tree and like make pillowcases and stuff. But I see all it is to just really showcase that trees have so much spiritual significance, especially by so many different communities. Even our beautiful flamboyant trees that I mentioned earlier, they're indigenous to like Australia, and the indigenous people in Australia have their own spiritual attachments to this tree, and believe that this tree also is a holder of spirits. So Natalie's connection to this tree, I feel like, is very much personable to her and possibly her past life experiences and connections. But I also feel like because she's a child, she is so much more vulnerable to receiving information from the natural world, because we've spoken about this, just referencing season 1 episode 2 with Angelica and her son. We spoke about how children are just so much closer to the veil. Like, they're just born, they still have that innocence and that sense of imagination, and it's that imagination that connects them to divine source. It's that imagination that connects them to their God self. And so it makes sense to me that Natalie had this experience with this tree and was able to almost have this telepathic communication with this tree, and knew that this tree was hurting by the development that had happened in this area and the very little reverence that was being paid to the souls that were still very much on this land.
And her brother as well. They both partook in playing with this tree and building a relationship with this tree. It sounds like it was a big part of their childhood, you know, like, let's go play with the tree, let's go heal the tree, which is so beautiful, because it just shows that connection with nature again, and being a child. Natalie, being this vulnerable, very open child, probably sensitive to the things around her that's happening at this house. And though outside she had this positive influence, inside the house was a completely different energy that she was feeling. And it was very eerie to hear that her mother and father would often find her in a trance against the wall, just speaking in whispers. And that really like creeped me out.
I think that's every parent's nightmare.
Finding your kid. Oh my, you crazy? Yes. And I'm not here to say that it's like the devil or a demon or anything per se, but this entity, whatever it was, I mean, she felt like it was negative, and I'm gonna trust that it just seemed like it was trying to channel through her, using her as its tool.
Yeah.
And thus she started mumbling whatever it was she was saying. And that's kind of scary, because I feel like that is like one of the steps where it's like, it's getting closer to grasping you and manifesting and gaining control. So I'm glad that she got out of that house, you know? And that night that she describes walking to her parents' bed, I think every one of us can recall being a child and just being terrified for no reason like that, you know? But it was justified when the static on the TV came on, because it's like, okay, she was really feeling something, you know?
Right.
In the long hallway, that long walk to her parents' room. It must have been frightening, you know, for the parents. Hence why the mother started taking precautions, you know, doing broom magic and other means to fight this spiritual battle within their house.
No, I completely agree. And I think that just in recalling when I was interviewing Natalie and retrieving this story, something that she repeatedly said was that she used to be so connected, and with time and with her age, she feels like it's so much harder for her to connect with the spiritual realm the way that she used to, just without ease, without trying, like, be able to connect. And I found that her mother's sentiments with, you know, like, turning a broom upside down brought back so much memory of hearing older people talk about that being a way that you could kind of, like, keep negative energy out. And then it brought back a slew of memories of, like, broom magic is, like, used very much in the Caribbean region. And so there's so many, like, sayings and superstitions around, like, you sweep over somebody's foot and they can't get married. You know, like, it's seen as, like, a insult for you to sweep over somebody's foot, like a malicious act. Or there's this other one where if somebody comes over to your house and you don't want them to come back again, when they leave your home, you're supposed to throw salt on the way, on the path in which they walked to leave your house. And then you're supposed to sweep up the salt and sweep it out the front door. So you're basically removing their energy from your home. And then you turn the broom upside down and you put it to stand up upside down. And this seals the spell of they cannot enter this space again. And to my understanding, it works. To the people who've had the opportunity to use it, the people them say that broom magic is a real thing.
I mean, it makes sense. The salt, again, a cleansing tool. Mm-hmm. And it's very widely used in a lot of spiritual and magical practices. And same with broom magic. That's a very Wiccan and Celtic practice as well. The broom is like a symbol of cleansing. And they use it symbolically to cleanse the home as well. They just have that typical wooden, shrubby looking broom. And that was like a tradition, and you sweep the energy. It's not for like literal sweeping of the dust. You almost do like a sweep in the air,
yeah,
to rid the space. And then isn't there one wedding tradition where you jump over a broomstick?
It's the jump in the broom tradition. Like, brooms hold so much significance, and it's across cultures.
So
it's really nice to see this kind of play out in a story, because I know that in past stories we've seen people like pray and use salt, but for somebody to enact broom magic, I think is like such an ode to like our culture and just the old ways in which, you know, getting things done. These days sage is like so accessible to people, but back in the day, people in the Caribbean wasn't burning sage. We didn't have access to stuff like that. But what we did have was like rosemary and mint and bay leaf and the things that was growing in our own backyard, and those were the things that we were using.
I think those are the best means of practice.
Facts.
Because they not only grow on the land that you're living on, so they're native to that land, you know, and you're also not supporting an industry that profits off of, you know, I heard that sage is kind of not, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like it's turning controversial a bit, the selling of sage and the spiritual marketplace as well. It's so on the rise, spiritual practice, that I also want people to know that, like, you don't always have to go out and buy these tools and these things, you know, because a lot of them are right outside your door. And I feel that it's best when you make talismans, or you make the ingredients, or you find and forage these ingredients for your practice or spells or rituals or whatever you're using them for, because it has just more significance. There's more of a process to it. And I think it's very cool that she used the broom magic, and that also that at the end of this story, once they left, it's just so beyond coincidental. You can call it synchronistic if you want, if that's even a word. Synchronistic.
Synchronistic is.
Synchronicity.
Yeah, you're there. Yeah, okay. Go ahead. You were on the right path.
Gabby would know, you know, she's a wordsmith.
you write in
extensive vocabulary.
Sis, you write into the horizon with confidence, okay? Even if it wasn't a word, I'd have been ahead, like, no, you know what you're talking about.
It's a new word. So anyways, but yes, it's so synchronistic that 2 years later down the road, they find out that another family has moved into the same house, experiencing the same occurrences. And he went into the trouble of finding the background of this land and home. And yeah, I just love these full circle stories because you don't always know. We're left a lot in mystery.
It's true. There's a lot of, like, open-endedness that kind of leaves you. And the ambiguity, I think, in certain stories is nice because it allows for the listener to be able to conjure their own imaginative ending. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like having stories in which we have a beginning, a middle, and an end allows for people to have that sense of, like, relief, you know? Like, I think that it's human nature to want to see the beginning, the middle, and the end. You know, like, nobody likes to be left hanging.
Definitely.
So it's nice to sprinkle these in.
Yeah, I mean, it even had a climactic moment where I feel personally, like, my theory that this entity was gaining strength because it cracked that huge table, the glass, in half, which takes a lot of energy to do for a non-physical being. So it started with the static, the whispers, and then a crack table hurting the mother's foot, who's been cussing this ghost out all day and night. So
you know, I have a theory that when you see an uptick, sometimes I do think that these entities gain power as time progresses, but I also have a theory that when you have a anniversary of some kind of like event come up, and usually a tragedy, something that elicits a big emotional like output, I definitely think that you see a surge of energetic activity leading up to this anniversary because that energy is still there, it's still looming. And so it seemed like her and her family stayed there for like 2 years after this event had actually occurred. Like, I got the impression they stayed a while after. They didn't, this wasn't the like end all be all for this, the story of the house and their relationship with it. But I think that maybe this influx of energy may have happened around a specific time period for a specific reason.
Any last points you would like to make on this story?
Yes, I want to take this time to go into something, to go into content that's very near and dear to my heart. And part of what encouraged this conversation and why I feel like it's important is because when I was doing research on the Mandal area, I came across several articles of local people, you know, fighting to save Mandal Bay. Because back around 2015, there was a proposed development that was supposed to take place on Mandal Bay by the company Transcontinental Realty Investors. And their plan was to create a 300-room condominium, a restaurant, a boating marina, and virtually make just another place in our Virgin Islands virtually inaccessible to the local people. And I sit on and I think about if this, I don't know where it is right now in the process or if the people really put a stop to it. I haven't heard anything about it in recent years, but I think about how many of us really don't know. When someone purchases land, right, they are purchasing all of these structures that are on that land. I know that from the eye, all you see is bush when you look at huge swaths of land on our islands. But in between those dense, like, containers of bush, there are, like, buildings, like, in which, like, historical artifacts. I know stories of people who have purchased land and found shackles and found, you know, like, very significant cultural pieces that belong to the people of the Virgin Islands. But because these people are unfamiliar oftentimes with the culture here, and there's no real desire to know the history and to be a part of the community in a way that says, let's give these artifacts to the government of the Virgin Islands to preserve for the people of the Virgin Islands, because at the end of the day, this is their ancestry, this is their history. Oftentimes, I see people will either discard of these invaluable artifacts, or they will simply keep them and use them for their own, you know, like hand-me-downs to pass down to their family who ancestry is not connected to this land. And so I say all of this to say that it's so important to me, and I will talk about this until my very last breath, for us to redefine the way that we view land ownership. We are not owners of this land. We are stewards of this land. And part of being a steward of the land is to be a caretaker of the land. And so I think that as local people, as people who are invested in our community, we have such a responsibility to be very thoughtful and intentional about who we sell our land to. Because you have an instance like this where Mandal Bay is literally teeming with historical richness, you know, and to have investors just buy the land and want to like root up everything and rip down everything and create something that isn't even going to necessarily benefit the local people, it just really makes you take pause. And I really urge my local community, we must get ahead of the gentrification that's happening in our territory. We must work harder to be stewards of our land, because if we do not take up space in the Virgin Islands as Virgin Islanders, we will lose this territory. We will lose this land to people who have no interest in our culture, in our history, or in our community.
You touch on so much of what the people on island feel but don't know how to express, or don't know exactly what is happening, but they see the changes around them daily, yearly, slowly come in. And it's not to say that we're against people coming down and living their dream to be part of this. It's just exactly what Gabrielle is saying, is to have an involvement in the community and want to participate. And I know as well, I've heard stories of some people, wealthier people, that have purchased plots of land, like for example one above Hull Bay somewhere that I won't mention, that has significant historical buildings and structures there, and I'm here like, wait, how come I don't know about this? How come we don't know about this? Like, and it's not accessible to us because that's their private property now, and now it's part of their, you know, glorification that they get to show their their tourists that rent out the Airbnb, or their friends that come every summer to their summer house, you know? So I think it's a very good point.
Yes, exactly. And how dare you purchase a piece of land and find things like shackles, yeah, and hold on to this, especially if you are someone who is white and you are from the States. How dare you come to our Virgin Islands, buy a plot of land, find something like shackles, and decide that it's appropriate to pin these up on the wall for your Airbnb guests to get to enjoy, when the literal atrocities that are attached to this artifact and this historical significance attached to it, this is the entitlement. This is why there is so much animosity toward tourists and people that are deciding to come and visit, because there is a level of disregard for basic human, like, there's no humanity in it. And I just, it really, Asha, you can hear, I am so like, I'm beside myself, because it's not just Mandal Bay. It's all of the places of areas in which people feel like they can buy this land and then commercialize it and build these big stupid homes that look ugly on the hillsides that once were untouched and undeveloped, and these people are all like, oh well, you know, I love the Virgin Islands, it's such so much natural beauty, but you rip down a natural beauty to fuss 5 minutes your hair mm-hmm. to build up these big stupid homes
or buy beachfront property but make it private and so inaccessible to locals.
Anyway, guys, it was so great for you guys to join us for episode 1 of season 2. We know that we've taken you on a wild ride, as always.
Had to let off a little steam back
yes.
there.
So. it would mean so much to us if you can give us a rate and a written review
please.
On the podcast streaming platform that you're using. And please... take this episode, copy and paste it to your Facebook, copy and paste it to your Instagram, tag us. There are so many people in our community, our Caribbean community, who would love this style of storytelling and discussion and don't know about it. So be your brother's keeper and share the podcast that with all the people, and please.
Yes, we are independent. It is me and Gabrielle, and we may be getting some help lately, so we gotta yes. add her in the credits as well. But we are super super independent podcast, so your support means the world to us, and it helps us keep going and pushing forward. So please, yeah, leave those reviews for us, 5-star reviews and ratings, and share with your friends and family. You guys have a good day.
Bye guys, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Caribbean Mystics Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share with your family and friends. Like, follow, and subscribe to keep up with all of our spooky Caribbean content.
Do you have a story you'd like to share that took place in the Caribbean? Email us at CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. That's CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. Or check the show notes for more info.
Caribbean Mystics is created and hosted by Paulina Creaky and Gabrielle Carrard. Theme song is Folktale Juve Rhythm by Umi Marcano.
Are you in need of a graphic design company that can help your business soar to new heights? Look no further than Sparrow and the Finch Designs. Our team of skilled designers can create stunning logos, eye-catching advertisements, and visually stunning websites that will make your business stand out from the flock. Trust Sparrow and the Finch Designs to bring your vision to life. Contact us today at 512-316-8830 to get started.